Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 10th of June, Anno Domini 2017. Happy birthday, Larry DeBellis. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Kick off your shoes, nothing to lose, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. It was Apple's turn in the spotlight this week, as most of the geek world turned to their Worldwide Developers Conference for all the latest out of Cupertino. They gave us a sneak peek of HomePod, the voice-controlled speaker designed to rival Amazon's Echo and Google's Home. It's the first brand-new hardware product from Apple since the Apple Watch. You can't buy it yet, but when you can, toward the end of the year, it'll set you back about $350. That's against Google Home, which costs $130, and Amazon Echo, which costs $180, or the Amazon Dot, which costs about $50. The speakers will likely be amazing, but the soul of any device of this type is the AI, and Siri is woefully behind Google and Alexa at this point. Interestingly, Google will let you make phone calls from your Google Home, and Alexa will make Echo to Echo or Echo to Dot or whatever calls.
Echo.
Exactly. Apple also showed new iPads. The iPad Pro is a 10.5-inch tablet, which is about 20% larger than the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, but not as big as the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Yes, if you want to be a real Apple fan, you'll have to buy all three. It's 30% to 40% faster than the previous generation. They've also doubled the maximum refresh rate to 120 hertz. The camera, battery life, and memory are all comparable to older versions. The 10.5-inch version will set you back about $650, and the 12.9-inch version will weigh in at about $800. New hardware gets updated software, iOS 11, which got a visual overhaul. You can send payments through iMessage now. My daughter discovered this about 6 years ago in Gmail, and I can tell you this is, at best, a mixed blessing. Apple also unveiled a new iMac Pro. Apple claims it's the most powerful Mac ever, and at $5,000, it better be. They also upgraded MacBooks and MacBook Pros, replacing last year's Intel Skylake processor with the new Kaby Lake processor, which gives the new laptops a bit of a performance boost. There's also a new desktop operating system to go along with all the new hardware, too. Mac OS Sierra is replaced by Mac OS High Sierra, which is apparently on more drugs. Safari supposedly runs JavaScript about 80% faster, and it blocks autoplay videos. Beautiful. A lot of people are complaining online that all of this stuff is incremental or also-rans or catch-up stuff, but Apple is not the company it was under Steve Jobs, and that's just a fact. It doesn't mean Apple will never innovate again. It just means they didn't this time. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's WWDC. That's Worldwide Developers Conference. Your choices are, wow, I am blown away. I'm pretty excited. Meh. And I could not conceivably care less, which appears to be winning with 67% of the votes so far. But I know you'll have a lot more to say, so if you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and so far at least the first item under the poll discussion is 10 June 17, Apple's WWDC. So you can add your comment that will live on for posterity. But you can also just give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Apple, the thing that most intrigued me was the HomePod. But again, for me, not a big deal. I'm not an Apple guy, so I didn't particularly need a third device. I mean, I have a Google Home, I bought the Echo when it was on sale at Christmas for $35. Because I figured, what the hell, $35? The Amazon Dot. And I don't really need a third one. I haven't got the, I haven't made the Dot and the Home talk to each other yet, although I've seen the videos of them supposedly doing that. I do love the fact that I can make phone calls from the Google Home. And because Google recognizes my voice, if I've got it set up for multiple people and I say call such and so, or Elaine says call such and so, they might be different people because it comes out of our own individual contact lists.
Mm-hmm.
Echoes let you call Echo to Echo. So if you've got an Echo and I've got an
right.
Echo and we both set them up,
mm-hmm.
I can say call Dave Enright and it'll call your Echo.
I still think that's an awful high price, though.
You should probably turn your microphone on.
Oh, thought it was.
that works a little better.
Little Tim. But I would think, over $300.
Well, it's a combination now. It's
$350.
Yeah, $350. $349.
$349.99.
No, Apple's one of the few companies that doesn't put the 99 cents on.
Yeah.
But it's a combination of the Sonos speaker, which is $200 for a wireless speaker like that, plus the Amazon Echo, which is the $100, and theoretically, that adding more features to Siri is going to overcome the issues that you raised earlier, where Siri is sort of left behind. In fact, one of the annoying things that we have in the Apple world is that Siri did a lot more things before Apple bought the company.
Yeah.
It's
true.
Yeah.
Well, they took away everything it did that wasn't Apple.
It wasn't Apple, yeah.
Right.
And slowly a lot of that stuff has been coming back, but it's still there are things that it doesn't do that it used to. There's a lot of people looking for wireless speakers. We at our store, we're a Sonos retailer, and we sell a lot of Sonos speakers. And the $200 Sonos Play One, for such a small speaker, sounds so good, fills a room so well. You get a lot of bass out of it, even though it doesn't have a dedicated subwoofer. And it's just really easy to carry the speaker around and use, especially now we're getting into good weather. You take it out on the back porch, plug it into an outlet, and you've got wireless music, either from your computer, from your phone, from your home theater. In fact, what we often see is that the idea is that it's small enough you can carry it from room to room, but people generally end up coming back in and buying more.
Yeah.
I need one in this room, I need one in that room, I need one in the other room.
No, that's fair.
And what's kind of neat with the Sonos, and we'll see about the HomePod, iTunes can already do it with existing speakers. You can have different music playing on each speaker. So the kids downstairs can have one song playing and the adults upstairs can have another song playing. Or you can put the same music to all your speakers. So
right.
As you walk through the house, you get the same music everywhere.
Right, right. I believe they all do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a nice feature.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than wiring speakers in the walls.
Right.
There was that trend in the late 90s where every new home construction, there were coax and Ethernet and speakers on pretty much every wall in every room. Because we didn't know what we would need. We didn't know what wall it was going to be on, and it was a lot easier to put it in while you're building the house.
Yep.
They didn't quite envision wireless taking off so well.
Right.
And so now you don't have to have all of those extra wires. Although
if you do, it's probably faster.
Yeah, wired is more efficient. Wireless is more convenient. Take your pick.
Right, exactly. Well, and when it's music, you're not using that much bandwidth.
Right.
So music is video, yes, that's a lot of bandwidth, but music, not so much. So it's pretty neat. Apple introduced some interesting things.
They upgraded all of their computers to the new Kaby Lake processor, which gains you battery life, a little bit of speed, and a lot of graphic speed. That was one of the big things that the new processors do. So that means we have a lot of yesterday models on sale in our office.
Yeah, that's of course an issue. If you absolutely need the latest thing, you can wait a while. But if you're looking to get an almost new Mac, the one generation back, which I've got.
Yesterday it was the new model.
Right, right. Yesterday, literally yesterday, it was the new model. We've got a MacBook Pro that's 4 years old, maybe, and it runs great. So a model that's a week old probably runs pretty flipping great.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's the kind of thing you have there. And there's a view of the inside.
The inside of the HomePod.
It's a seven-tweeter array. Are you sure that isn't the model from the underground bathysphere and abyss?
Yeah.
Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York. Hiya, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's going on today, Nick? I got a question. I'm on the BitTorrent sites. I'm on Views. I'm on the Pirate Bay, and they recommend I get a good VPN. Now, what would your recommendation be for a good VPN, low cost or no cost? That's my question.
Yeah. Here's the issue. With VPNs, the low or no cost ones are almost invariably very, very slow. And the reason is, of course, they're free and thousands upon thousands of people are using them. So they're often very, very slow. Now, on the other hand, there is a browser out there called Opera. And the Opera browser comes with a built-in VPN.
I'm trying to find. We had a link to it on our website a few weeks ago.
And the basic idea, it also has an ad blocker and a battery saver, but it's got...
Yeah, because basically since Time Warner took over Spectrum or Spectrum vice versa, I've been getting nasty grams from my cable company saying, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the legality of that I'm going to bypass. That's not, you know, whatever. That's not what you're even asking about. But there is a free, if you use the Opera browser... it's a free VPN. I have tested it. It is unlimited as long as you're using Opera. You can, of course, pay for that VPN and use it on any browser, right? But if you just download the Opera browser, you get that free VPN. Now, that is not also Tor compliant, right? That's not Tor. That's just Opera.
So how do you think it compares up to Google Chrome, though? Is it the same?
Well, it's similar to Google Chrome, yes. But of the free VPNs,
might want to explain Tor too.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the
well. So we'll start with a VPN. Will hide where you are coming from. So when you go to a website, that website knows you're on Time Warner coming from the Rochester area. When you turn on a VPN, the other end doesn't know where you're coming from. They only know where the VPN is coming from. So if you use a VPN that, say, comes out in Los Angeles, then...
Or another country.
Actually,
that's what you're using it for, to go to another country,
right.
Come out of another country.
And so that's one of the reasons why it's so slow, is it in essence, is bouncing your traffic farther around the Internet before you get to the other end. So that just hides where you're coming from. Tor, which is an acronym for the Onion Router, tries to hide who you are by bouncing your traffic through at least three, if not more, servers before it gets to the other end. It's kind of like what you see in all the crime shows where, you know, he went through six servers and we were able to backtrace him. There is some evidence that the NSA is hiring colleges to figure out how to defeat Tor. And the NSA might be running their own Tor exit nodes. So you enter Tor, and like an onion, it goes through a whole bunch of different layers and then comes out of Tor to go to the site you really wanted to go to. And if someone is monitoring that exit node, they might be able to track where you came in and track you back to who you are.
Right.
All right. So best recommendation for a VPN, what company or what website would you recommend?
Oh, man. There are a lot of, like I said, if you're looking for free, I cannot recommend one. Because the ones I've tried so far are, if anybody out there has a better suggestion, call in, please. But the big problem is that most of them are so very slow. There are a few good ones.
But since they're free... You can try them out and see which one works best for you.
Right. Tunnel Bear, WinScribe, Hotspot Shield is the one that's from, that's part of Opera. Speedify and Private Tunnel are the five I would recommend. But it depends on how fast you need to be.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for your advice. Sounds like a winner chicken dinner. You guys have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, and make sure you set your alarm for next week and tell all your friends, because we're going to have a special guest in the studio, Mark Murphy, who's the big noise at Greenlight, Greenlight Networks, the people who put fiber to the home here in the western New York area. Well, midwestern New York, I guess they're Rochester and environs, will be our guest. So that should be kind of fun. But we're going back to the phones right now. Our next caller is Mick from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Mick. What's up?
Hi there. I'm going up on the subject that Steve was talking about on the audio equipment, the speakers.
Yeah.
And what I got to say to that, you know, he said he's got a bunch of them at the store, but you know, one of the things I've always thought about audio equipment, I've owned, you know, in my lifetime, I've owned 33 cars. Mm-hmm. Okay, between my daughters, my wife, everything like
that. Where do you put them all?
And, yeah.
Never mind, go ahead.
Yeah, but, and the car I'm driving today, in 10 years, it'll be worth nothing. Okay?
Yep.
Now, I have a friend who bought $8,000 worth of KES speakers.
Wow.
Now, they, 40 years from now, that'll probably be worth $5,000. Yeah. So just don't break them. You know, that'll be worth $5,000. You know,
right.
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, Steve was talking about that 7 or 8 tweeters.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when as you get older, you lose your ability to hear high.
Yeah.
You know, the bass will stay with you forever, but, you know, on the high end, you lose that, so you need, you know, extra tweeters or an abundant amount of tweeters because you're not hearing that well. So just to, but Steve, you know, next time he tries to sell me, you're saying this is, you know, this is going to be working 20 years from now. You know, whereas you're the car you drove in here with,
right?
But yeah. it's more designed for the computer technology today. Trying to attach your really expensive 20-year-old speakers onto the internet can be a little tricky. So we're seeing more and more people getting these small portable speakers that still have big sound. And for a lot of the audiophiles, they'll still have that room that has all this nice stuff set up, and that's where you go to listen to your albums. And you know what the next song is because you've listened to that album for 20 years.
Right.
I hate that when I'm listening to the radio and a song plays and the next song isn't the one that was next on the album.
No, but that's always been my philosophy. I knew, you know, Dr. Bose?
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Not personally.
I knew him as a kid.
Okay?
Oh, wow.
But West Philadelphia. Okay. And, you know, it's always been my theory about audio equipment. I mean, that's a long-term investment. It's, you know, especially at the low end, you had a couple $100, you get a much better system.
Right.
And it's certainly, when you look back on it, you think, yeah, I wish I'd have bought this. You know what I mean? Anyway, enough of me. Yep. Catch you later. Bye there.
All right. Thanks, Mick.
And then, yeah, what happened to our moon rock needles?
That's right. That's exactly. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And it still sounded like crap.
And it still sounded like crap. Yeah, Mick is right. You, there are some technologies that withstand the test of time. Good speakers is one of them, since your ears haven't honestly changed in the last 50 or 60 years. Yes, you may have lost range in your hearing, but the technology, shall we call it, of getting to your ears has not changed.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What?
Except in your case.
Huh?
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Good morning. I wanted to find out if there's a way of blocking specific websites from a browser.
Yes.
Next question. No. Some browsers have a block list you can put in them, so they'll never go to that website. That's not a very common feature, though.
Right.
Typically, what you do is add that entry to your host file so that it can't get there. But that's a little geeky. Let me see if I can find a link to how to do that. So basically, the host file is a file in your computer that translates the name you type, like soundbites.org, into the actual numeric address of the computer at the other end.
Right.
And
what is your browser?
I use Opera, Firefox, and the Windows, the regular one that comes with Windows.
Edge,
yeah.
Yeah, you can, in fact, block websites. Of course, the one you don't use is the one I know most about.
Opera.
Chrome.
Opera has that feature built in, it looks like.
Right. Opera has it built in. Chrome has an add-on. As for, I'm sure Firefox does too, but I'm looking that up.
A lot of times they're sold as parental blocks, so you can block adult sites on your kid's computer.
Right.
But you can put any website you want in there to stop people from going there.
Right. There's an add-on called, surprisingly, BlockSite.
BlockSite, okay.
And that's an add-on for Firefox and for Chrome and probably for everything else. So, you know, that will help you. You should be able to use that. What Steve is talking about, was talking about earlier when you were talking about blocking them right from your operating system, is doable, but is pretty
geekier. Yeah.
I think I just moved your microphone. Sorry. Your
thing.
Camera.
We've had companies that want to block Facebook from employees that spend too much time not working.
Right.
And so we usually hide it in the host file because they don't know how to get there.
And some routers do that. You should check the router that you have on your home network if you have one.
If it does that. That's a feature of OpenDNS, too.
Right.
So if you set your router to use OpenDNS, then you can put blocked sites into the DNS, so when someone types an address, they can't get there.
Right. But so there's a lot of ways to do it. The one you use, you know, if you've got a house full of 10 kids, it's probably easier to do it at the router.
Okay. So how do I do that at the router?
Well, it depends on the router, and there's only about 200 or 300 different kinds of routers. So the thing you need to do at this point, and I'm hesitant to mention it because so few people apparently are capable of it, you need to read your manual.
Okay.
Sorry, that's flippant, but you know what I mean.
Right.
You need to go into the manual and see if it, in fact, will block websites. And if it does not, maybe it's time to invest in a router that does.
Okay.
And you can go to OpenDNS. There's the free version and the pay version. So DNS basically translates names to numbers, and by putting OpenDNS in your router, you can use their DNS to say when you type Facebook.com, go nowhere instead of going to Facebook.
Right. Okay.
Right. So you can do it in a couple of different ways.
Cisco bought OpenDNS. When did that happen?
Yeah, a while ago. Most routers will do it. Linksys, Netgear or D-Link, Belkin, Asus, Comcast, AT&T will all do that. You have to log into it. So if you have, you know, if you've got one that you can log into, it's generally under something called rules or basic rules, or there might be two separate ones, one for wired and one for wireless. Generally, there will be a section, you may have to scroll down to find it, called Block Domain List. And you then add in a domain, either by name or by IP address.
Mm-hmm. All right.
IP address is actually better for a couple of reasons, one being that places have multiple names sometimes, particularly the less reputable sites. So you either have to put in 5 or 6 entries for one site, or you just block it by IP address.
Okay, so here's a secondary question then. How do I find out the IP address? Is that just whateverit is.com?
Whateverit.com is in fact the name, actually, and that's generally fine. Okay. I don't want you to get hung up on the IP address. You can often do that by saying by opening up a terminal window and saying ping P-I-N-G space. And the name of the site, right? Like don'tgohere.com. And when it comes back, it will say pinging and give you a number. That number is the IP address.
Okay. I'll give that a try. I'll try the browser route.
Well, try the router route. Route. If you have your own router on the network.
I'll try the router. That'll cover everything.
Yeah, exactly. That way you don't have to worry whether they're on, you know, it doesn't cover their phones if they're using cellular data.
But most people set their phone.
And nothing will.
Most people set their phone to Wi-Fi when they're at home.
Right.
Right.
And nothing will. So just put that out of your head because there's nothing you knew about it.
Okay.
But as far as everything else, in many cases, again, depending on your router, pay attention to what it can do, because on many of them, you can also set rules based on time of day.
Mm.
So you can say, all right, you can have Facebook from 8 to 10 p.m.
Huh.
You know, so there's a lot of stuff that routers can do, but it's kind of geeky, and you have to do a little bit of setup and learning.
Okay.
But there's a lot you can do with them.
Great. Very good. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the help you give to everybody.
Well, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
A lot of places, particularly places with younger kids, want to block certain sites. And not because they assume their children are going to them every day, but because often you click on they'll click on a message that takes them to a bad place, or they'll click on a normal place that happens to have an ad for something that takes them to a bad place.
Well, I think there's also...
They're looking for sporting goods.
Well, there's, I believe, another package. It's called Net Nanny. That you can throw on there. A Net Nanny will, one, you can control where the kids go. You can control the time that they're on. And if they're emailing or texting back and forth, you know, through messaging and all that, you can also see the messages that they're doing.
Right. The only problem with Net Nanny is it is specific to a single computer.
Yes.
So if you want a quick and easy way to block everything in your house from getting somewhere, then doing it at the router is the best way.
Oh, yes, definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of corporations, like Steve was saying before, do that because they've got, like you said, folks will go on there and do QVC or, you know, Facebook.
Yep.
And,
yep.
And they're doing it on company time. They go, well, it's my computer. Again,
no,
folks. You know, that always baffles my mind when folks at work will say, well, this is my computer.
It's our fault. We call them personal computers.
Yep.
So people think it's their computer.
It, you know, it just kicks me back to the days when I'd sit there and go to different companies and that and, you know, deleting something. Well, that's my computer. That's the way. No, it's not. It's the company's.
Right.
And they get all ticked off because I was putting things back the way the president of the company at this one place wanted things. He wanted it so if he went from one to the other in this area, they were all the same. And folks, you know, got a little savvy from home. They'd come home and are in, and they'd add, you know, solitaire and all these other games. And he didn't want those on there or going off to this side and that. And we had to set it up so they got blocked. And I remember this one lady, she was all ticked off. She not only ordered stuff on QVC, but had it delivered to work. And the folks back in the warehouse would bring it up to her so she could take it home.
Nice.
Didn't want it getting stolen. So she had it delivered to work.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, it takes all kinds, you know? I mean.
We used to have people who would be very angry when we set up their computers to only do the things at work that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have people, you know, bring in their own computers and say, well, get me on the network. This is not at RIT, of course, because academic freedom. But at another place I work, get me on the network. No. We don't put home devices on this network. That's simple enough.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, I can't. What am I going to do? How about your job? I'm just off the top of my head.
Duh.
Didn't you say you had kids in class that wanted to be able to check their eBay auctions?
Yes. Yes. And well, but that's okay because it's their computer.
Yeah.
When they bring a computer into the classroom, you know, a lot of faculty get upset, close your laptops, we're going to talk to them, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes I'll do that when it's something, but you know what? You're paying for this class. If you want to sit there and go on eBay, I can't stop you and I don't care.
No.
If you don't care enough about your education and the money you spent for it, or more likely your parents spent for it,
yeah, really.
Then okay, you know, I'm here to help anybody who wants help, but they got to want the help.
Yeah, like you say, it doesn't matter to you whether they pass or fail.
You know,
if they fail, they'll be back again.
Well, you gave me a bad grade. No, you earned a bad grade. Mm-hmm. And that's a cliche, but it's also true. You know, it works for faculty, too. Faculty help those who help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works. And so, if you know, what are you going to say? All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It's a truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
We are Sound Bites.
We are Sound Bites.
We were
channeling our inner Shatner earlier. Everybody's got one.
Yeah.
When reporters at The Intercept approached the National Security Agency on June 1st to confirm a document that had been anonymously leaked to the publication in May, they handed over a copy of the document to the NSA to verify its authenticity. When they did so, The Intercept team inadvertently exposed its source because the copy showed fold marks that indicated it had been printed, and it included encoded watermarking that revealed exactly when it had been printed and on what printer. The watermarks were from a Xerox DocuColor printer. Many printers use this or similar schemes, printing faint yellow dots in a grid pattern on printed documents as a form of steganography, which is encoding metadata about the document into its hard copy output. Researchers working with the Electronic Frontier Foundation have reverse engineered the grid pattern employing this class of printer. It's been determined that the document passed to The Intercept was printed on May 9th of 2017 at 6:20 a.m. for a printer with the serial number 535218 or 29535218. Armed with this evidence, the NSA was able to quickly determine who had printed the document by checking audit logs. NSA investigators quickly narrowed it down to Reality Lee Winner, which is a great name, Reality Winner. Which she clearly wasn't in this case. A 25-year-old contractor for Pluribus International Corporation, a company that provides analytical translation and cyber warfare development services to the intelligence community. Winner was working at the NSA's Fort Gordon, Georgia facility. Her identification was apparently aided, according to the Justice Department's arrest warrant affidavit, by her contacting The Intercept from her work email. Okay, she's clearly not tremendously good at being a spy. The U.S. government agency conducted an internal audit to determine who accessed the intelligence report since its publication. The U.S. government agency determined that six individuals had printed the report. Winner was one of these six. A further audit of the six individual desk computers revealed that Winner had email contact with The Intercept. The audit did not reveal that any of the other individuals had email contact with the news outlet. When confronted by the FBI, Winner confessed to being the source of the leak. So did you know your printer was snitching on you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And that's true. Every color printer prints that series of dots,
yeah,
very faint yellow dots, in a specific pattern which tells you the date and the time and the serial number of the printer. Every one of them does it. It's a law enforcement thing that was put into place many, many years ago. I do not believe it's true of black and white laser printers. I do not believe it's true of black and white inkjet printers. I do not know if it's true of color inkjet printers. But pretty much every major color laser printer does this.
including the high-end Konica, Xerox, Canon copiers, which are, in essence, color laser printers.
Right, DocuPrints and DocuTex and DocuWhatevers from Xerox all do this.
Okidata doesn't do it, according to the EFF. EFF has a list of printers that they know do or do not do.
Oh, no kidding.
It.
I didn't know Okidata was still around.
Maybe that's why it doesn't do it.
You got to find a printer that's still working and then find out it doesn't do it.
Some of the Samsungs don't do it.
I will tell you what, though. Color laser printer, holy moly, those are nice.
Mm-hmm. We just got one for a customer the other day. It was, $250?
Yeah.
Color laser with duplex and network.
$250.
I remember that was $50,000.
Yeah.
And we were excited when Apple released one that was only $10,000.
Now, let me ask you a question about that one. Who makes it?
That is a Xerox.
And is it individual cartridges?
Yep, four separate toner cartridges.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Now I gotta pry $250 out of my slush fund. Because having a color printer for me is unimportant. The only thing I ever print anymore are these to bring in, and I do that on black and white printer. But my wife does a lot of color printing
for
the coffee stand, and she's, right now it's either printed out on my father's old inkjet and laminated, or it's in black and white. She colors it in by hand or whatever, because we don't have a color printer.
I think we moved it up to the one with duplex for $279. $279. About $300.
$300?
With a duplexer. My wife, I'm trying to get my wife to do that, too. She prints all her book lists of all the books she owns, and then she goes to book sales and still buys the same book again because she couldn't find it on her list.
Yeah.
Print it double-sided. Don't waste all that paper.
Doesn't your wife have some sort of electronic device that could have a database
yes.
on it?
My wife is like your wife and her coffee list.
Yeah. Oh, we won't go there. Do not go there.
My wife has talked to your wife about her coffee list. So what coffee do you have?
Well, she's redoing, they're moving the public market. My wife has a coffee stand at the public market. We have a coffee stand at the public market. I paid for it. It's her coffee stand. Yeah. That's how that works.
Yeah.
She has a coffee stand at the public market, and they're moving from the temporary shed back to the new shed sometime in, I don't know, this month, next month. I don't remember. There's a date she can go in, and there's a date she can get set up, and the date they open, and I don't remember what all those dates are. But it's very soon. And she's redoing the entire stand. She's got more space. And so in that, she's also, reevaluating which coffees she carries. There are a bunch she couldn't carry before simply because there was no room. And now there's room. So she's doing that. And in the process of doing that, she's putting together lists she can hand out to customers about each one, the acidity and the flavor notes and all the other stuff. And so I'm going to just grab that list and put it online for her finally.
Wait a minute. Let's back up here for a minute.
Yeah.
How many years has she been doing this at the public market?
Well, my daughter is, what year is this? My daughter is 26, so 27 years. The lady who owned the stand before her had, I think it was 35 children, and was selling it because she was pregnant again. And, Elaine and I had been trying for 10 years, 12, 11 years at that point. And we joked about the fact that this was it. This was going to do it. And literally, we bought the stand, opened it, and she was pregnant. So, some of you out there might not want to ever buy a coffee stand.
Or a business.
Right.
It changes your whole life.
Was it one of the workers that were helping put the stand together?
That might be it. I don't know. No, if you've seen my daughter, you know she is my spitting image.
Oh, heck yeah.
I have said that to people many times. There's no way I could claim this is not my child.
No way. No way.
But at any rate, the point here is that she, I bought her thebeanqueen.com, and there's almost nothing there. And she's never used it or put anything on it or anything else.
And we've asked for a long time.
Everybody asks. But it's not, she's an analog person when it comes to the coffee stand.
It wasn't a priority to her.
Right. Now it's actually putting the lists together is a priority for her. So once that's done, I'll steal them and put them online for her.
There you go. And you can be the hero.
And I will be the hero. Not that she'll ever use it or see it.
No, but other people will. And that will, help her out greatly. She just, like you said, she just doesn't see it at the moment. But if folks know that, oh, you know, they can get their list ready by viewing it online, you know, and make their list of what coffees they want to get, come in, it's going to be faster service for
them.
Well,
where it's really going to be useful is in the future when somebody comes to her and says, I saw online you have this coffee, I'd like to try it.
There you go.
And she's going to be excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's taken a while for it to come full circle.
Right. But
what's a good percolator to buy?
You don't buy percolators. You heathen.
I grew up with that little
Godless
percolator percolating in
so
the kitchen.
So did I. The best method is one cup pour over. French press is very good if you do it right. Most people do not. But that's a different show. Coffee Talk. We'll be debuting that in a couple of weeks. All right, back to the phones for Computer Talk on Sound Bites. Our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. Hi, Ken. What's up?
Good afternoon. Nick, hearing you week after week after week, I know that you're in the market for a new Chromebook.
I
think I remember what your needs are. You would like a bigger screen. You would like it with Android capability.
Yes.
My question is, have you had any luck?
No, and here's why. One is Google's fault. They are having an issue with adding Android to Chromebooks. That issue is the same one that Apple had when they first brought out the iPad. The Android apps don't scale up to the bigger screen well.
Okay.
So they have postponed it several times.
Okay.
I have a couple of friends who bought new Chromebooks that will theoretically, and I'm sure they actually will, do Android apps, but none of the... Well, there was an update today, so I can't say none of them because I don't know what happened today.
Yeah.
But up until today, none of them have received the ability to do Android apps simply because Google's not ready yet.
I know from what I've read on YouTube there's a couple. There's the Asus 302.
Yep.
And there's also the Samsung Pro.
Right.
And a friend of mine, well, it's my brother-in-law's cousin, just ordered one. Couldn't order it from Amazon. Had to order it directly from Samsung. So he's waiting for it. He wanted the larger screen, but he caved and got the 12.3, I think it is. So.
Yeah. Well, 12.3 is an interesting compromise between big enough for our old eyes and small enough to carry.
Right, right. Well, we have the Acer 15.
We love it.
And we like it. I wish it had a better screen on it. And we also have a Chromebox, which I run off of a 24-inch monitor. So we're happy, but something better comes along, I'll bite at it.
Right. Now, they say there are a half a dozen that actually already run Android apps. I have not seen that happen.
Well, I've got the 15-inch, and like I say, if you go into, for right now, they're saying that if I go into the beta mode,
If I go into
the beta mode, then I can sit there and put the Android apps on it and play around with that. But I've just been so busy with some other things that I kept hoping by now that the Android apps would have been fixed and you could have just used it in regular mode, but that's not true.
I'd throw my two cents in. If I had to take between the Asus and the Samsung, you know, neither one of them are perfect.
No.
Obviously.
Right.
But I've read some reviews and young guys that have had several Chromebooks, not kids, they've really put out some really good reviews. It gives you a lot to think about. I would say that.
They like the Samsung.
Yeah, I would buy the Samsung.
Samsung makes a heck of a product. I have the original little 10 inch, I don't think it's a 9, I think it's 10 inch Samsung, and to this day it works great. It's slow because it's an older processor, and it sits in the kitchen for when we want to look stuff up when we're arguing about what we're seeing on television. But it works fine, and it just updated today to the latest as well. So Samsung makes a heck of a product. I also have a Toshiba, which is what I'm using right now, and it's amazing. And I have, I'm ashamed to admit, I also have an HP, which is the 15-inch one, which is the one I take with me day-to-day because of my eyes.
Your Toshiba must be an older machine, right?
It is. It's several years old at this point, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I read a review on it, and they really, really loved the screen. They said, I forget how the screen is measured in nitbits or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is, it's nice. It's
and really they really, really liked it, but, you know, you go to look for a new machine, it doesn't seem like they got a 16 model or a 17 model available.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I haven't seen any of the newer ones out from them either. Although the Toshiba, well, no, the Chromebook 2 is, what, 2015 or so. So, yeah. But right now, theoretically, the Chromebook Plus and Chromebook Pro, both from Samsung, have it available, but I haven't seen it. And Google's Chromebook Pixel, the original one from 2015, theoretically has it, but I don't know anybody who's got one. And the two Asus, the Flip C100PA and the Flip C213.
Let me quickly try to get a question in here. My brother-in-law, who's got the same Chromebook I've got, he's asked me this question two or three times, and I says, why don't you call Nick and get the answer on it? Now, I don't know much about it, but I think I know enough so that you can comment. He's able to get an app from the casinos, and he can run that app on a Windows machine. But he's tried to install the app on his Chromebook. He can install it, but it doesn't work. And
he said
to me, it's probably because it's Chrome. It won't work.
Hold on, Ken. That is exactly the reason. And I got to cut you off because we got to go. Windows programs will not work on a Chromebook.
Hold them.
Yep, we got to stay on the line. We'll talk to you after we come back. Got to take a quick break. Back on the other side with all of us. Bye.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're bringing you yet another whole hour of this nonsense. And I believe Ken is still on the line. Ken, are you still there?
I am. Let's finish this up. When Chromebooks are available with Android apps, do you think then these apps from the casinos will run on it or no?
If it is an Android app, it should.
Okay. And did
now,
you
wait a minute,
know
hold
that
on,
the
Ken.
New Chromebooks with Android okay. is going to have the apps right there on the unit?
The yeah,
it's not
yes.
going to be like the web store anymore, which was kind of weak to begin with.
Well, the web store has tens of thousands of things in it, but it will actually be the same Play Store that Google has on their phones.
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so
I don't have a smartphone, just a dumb phone.
Yeah, but many of the smartphones are pretty dumb too. But
okay,
here's
one last thing.
No, wait, Ken, let me finish, Ken. Let me finish what I was going to say earlier. You're getting half sets of information here.
Oh, okay. This is going to raise your blood pressure. I read your
article. Okay, stop talking. I want to finish about Android apps before we go on to another thing.
Okay, go ahead.
You've only got half the information at this point.
Okay.
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 So the thing about Android apps is they will be available from the Play Store. But this casino stuff, if your friend is not getting it through the Play Store, then no one guarantees whether or not it's clean. That is to say, it could have all kinds of spyware and adware and all kinds of other stuff that it pulls along with it. No one can guarantee it if they're not getting it through the Google Play Store.
I totally agree with that. But it is true that an Android app might appear someday.
Yes, yeah. And that entirely depends on the casino company.
Correct.
They may already have one. Your friend should check.
Yes, well, he's still waiting for his unit.
Yeah. And okay. What was the third question?
Third question. This is the one I read your article about Windows 7 updates.
Yes.
And I'm not here to distract from that. I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Thank you.
But, here's the but. I think a lot of people are being misled because, and I've got two sentences, and then I'm done. I counted up, since Windows hasn't been supplying the normal type of updates since, what, 15? I counted up how many updates I've had since then till now. The number is within a few of 300.
Yeah.
But they're mainly security updates.
Right. You're still getting some security updates, and you're getting things like Office updates and stuff like that.
Correct.
But you're not getting...
I agree with you.
Yep. You're not getting the internal Windows updates.
But I think people see all those, and they think they are.
Yep, they do.
So
they do.
I didn't call to tell you what's going on. I'm hoping my voice makes it more clear to other people.
Good. Thanks, Ken.
Okay?
Yep.
Catch you later. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye. I still get people who argue with me, and they want to argue with me. And I'm afraid I have to believe Microsoft when they say they haven't sent any out. I just got to believe them.
You think?
Silly of me, I know.
I know. You're going out on a limb on that
going
one.
Going out on a limb on that one. But, yeah, in terms of apps for devices, I know it looks like an app is an app is an app is an app. But the apps that run on Windows and the apps that run on Android and the apps that run on iOS and the apps that run on Sierra, High Sierra, Upper High Sierra, Sierra, dude, are not the same apps. They are entirely different products.
If the company is really good, they look exactly the same.
They look exactly the same, but they're yep. different versions. So you may find what looks to be the same app in multiple places, but it means they've hired people to write one that works on Macs, one that works on Chromebooks, one that works on Windows, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's a big pain for a developer deciding which platform to develop for, in what order. We hear stories from developers that write the Android app first to get it out of the way so then they can do the iOS app, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We got to force our programmers to do the other one first so then they can do this one.
Well, and what we're finding is that more people run the Android apps, but more people pay for the Apple apps.
Yep.
Apple people clearly have way more money than we Android people. But that's one of the reasons that that Google is working so hard to make Android apps run on Chromebooks. It gives you way more options, and it means that programmers only have to write for one platform to make it work in two places. And that's very attractive
that was
to
one
programmers.
Of the, and that was one of the early goals of Java.
Right.
You write Java once and it runs everywhere.
Write once, run everywhere.
But
and that was
it's an emulated application.
Right.
So, which means it runs really slow everywhere. Yes, it runs everywhere, but it runs really slow everywhere.
Right, and for some things that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, you certainly aren't going to write a game in Java and run it on every platform simultaneously because on some of them it will run really badly. And, of course, nowadays you can't even run Java on the... No, it's Flash you can't run. Flash was supposed to be the same thing.
And initially it was. And now the bad guys have usurped Flash. And we get so many fake Flash updates. I had another call this morning from a customer that got one of the fake update notices, and it said that she was infected and wanted her to call the phone number. So this fake Flash update notices, fake Java update notices, because the bad guys know that there are so many people using these technologies.
Right, right. And that's another lovely reason to be running a Chromebook.
You'll still get the notices, but you know they're fake.
Right, you know they're fake.
Well, one thing we tell our customers in our shop a lot is if it says Microsoft says you have a virus, it's obviously lying because you have Apple.
Right.
You don't have Microsoft. So that's
right.
That's kind of the first clue.
Right. And these people who send out, you know, your Chase Bank account has been compromised. Well, if you don't have an account at Chase Bank, you can pretty clearly just throw that email away without opening it.
But okay. I better call them and tell them they've got it wrong. They shouldn't have sent it to me. They must have met somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did mean somebody else, unfortunately. It's a fake somebody else anyway, so it doesn't really matter. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. What's up, Tim?
Yeah, hi, guys. I have a really simple question for you today. I had a problem with this in the past, and I think I just corrected it today before I called you guys, but I wanted to make sure to use a really simple... What I'm trying to do is store files in a numerical sequence just to keep things orderly. And what I'll do is I'll use like a text document or just a text file, the TXT. I'll write something, and then I'll label it test one, put it in a folder. I'll get out another the notepad again and do another one and label it test two, and it will show up in the folder as test one, test two. It's in numerical order.
Right.
It seems like in the past, maybe with different, whatever you'd call it, formats, a picture or video content, that I could not do that, but I just tried it. Doing test 1, test 2, test 10, test 12, test 22, test 102. It is numerical, which is what I want.
Right. What operating system are you in?
I'm in Windows 7.
Okay.
I wouldn't have thought 7 would have done it.
Well, it depends on a whole lot of things, including how you're sorting your data.
See, and the problem is it's not numerical, it's alphabetical. And so that's why you'll get 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0 all together. So we used to have to say, you know, if we were going to call it test 1, call it test 001.
Right.
So then they would all sort in the right order.
Right. You can do it that way. The other thing is if you look at the top of the thing where it says name and date and all that other stuff, those are clickable, and you can change your sort by clicking on those. So it may well be that you are currently sorting by date from oldest to newest.
Yeah.
So if you saved something as test one, then an hour later you make test two, they'll show up in that order.
And I know what you're talking about, and I tried it once, and somehow I ended up messing up. I couldn't get it back, and I'm like, oh, no. I'm really not that incompetent. I should be able to figure it out. But what I used to have to do was test one. Then once I learned it wouldn't go numerical, I did test 1, 2. Mm-hmm. But once you get up to 1, 9, I'd have to do like 1, 9, 1, and it'd be like, ah.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, you have to put in leading zeros to make a...
Yeah, 0001, 0002, et cetera.
Oh, right.
There is a group policy in Windows from 2012, that's Windows 7, right, where you can do numerical sorting by name. So somehow that must have got turned on.
Okay.
That's possible. But the point here is if you do it with the 0001 sort of thing, you go up to 9999 before you have an issue.
Exactly. And that's my solution, and that's what I'm going to run with. That's super simple.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, guys.
Yep. Have fun.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My assumption is I'm probably not going to write 1,000 of anything.
You think?
Or 9,999 of anything. I have already written well over 1,000 columns for the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I'm really only in the 1030s or 1040s, I think it is. So I've got a ways to go.
We used to do little tricks where you start a file name with a space to make it go to the top of the list.
Right.
Or start it with a period to make it go to the top of the list.
Period is the best.
But then we switched to Unix.
Right.
And...
Period
means invisible. Yeah.
Right.
We had a customer call up. You know, I just upgraded to OS 10, 10.0, and my thousands and thousands of files are gone. Yeah, because they all started with a period, and now period means invisible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You can show invisible files.
Yeah.
But then you get a whole lot of other nonsense that
you shouldn't
be doing.
That's why they're invisible.
What does DS underscore store mean? Well, that's the file that saves the position of the icon on your desk.
Right.
Oops. Why do I see that? Because you turned on invisible.
That's right. Or well, you're looking at a Mac, a program that was saved from a Mac on another machine.
Yep, you copy a Mac folder onto a PC, and,
right.
and it makes all the files visible on the PC.
Right.
Because Windows uses a different way to make files invisible.
Right, right. On a Linux machine, it would be the same.
So yep.
You still wouldn't see them, but on a Windows machine, it's different. And it's a real, it's always been a bit of a problem having multiple operating systems that do not cross each other well. But pretty much everybody's settled on the system message block format from Windows. It may not be the native for anybody but Windows, but everybody can read it and write to it.
Because Windows was the 800-pound gorilla, so everyone decided
right.
we have
mm-hmm.
to be compatible with Windows.
Yep. Right.
Now we're running into problems because Apple's using SMB2, you know, the later implementation, and that doesn't always work with SMB1 servers.
Right. And I get that, but those are generally older servers.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
How are they, guys? First off, I want to say thanks for your thoughts about Sophos antivirus for Linux.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I installed it. Works great. I mean, it's a nice relief to have something that's active all the time instead of having, like, clam AV.
Right.
You know, so it worked well, and I'll still run clam AV because it seems that it can find heuristics or some other viruses that you don't read about on Sophos.
Right, right, right. None of them are perfect. And having multiples, one that runs all the time, like Sophos, and that one that you can run on demand, like Clam, is a nice combination.
Yep, it works great. So my question, though, is going back to the very first caller. You've been talking about VPN in a way, and I was curious. I looked on the extensions of Firefox, and there are some VPN extensions.
Right.
What good are they?
Well, it depends on what they are. Some of them actually connect to a VPN,
yeah,
to a company that has a VPN at the other end. And then what a VPN does is essentially give you a tunnel through the internet.
Okay.
So if, let's say you're in a public place, you're at a cafe and you're writing the great American novel, and you don't want anybody else to see what you're doing, you can open up a VPN, and now there's a tunnel through the public internet that no one else can look into.
A lot of companies use that to let people work at home.
Okay.
So you connect to your company VPN, and it's as if you're at the company, and you can access company servers and do all the company secret stuff. Generally, the less legitimate use is to watch video from another country, like the UK, where when you're not physically in the UK and licenses don't let you use it.
Yeah, because that's why I was reading a couple of them, that one of them does connect, and it looks like takes you, using the extension on Firefox, takes you to this legitimate company that has a VPN. It's free of charge, and it looks like it should work well. I mean, you know, it promises a lot of things of acting like a VPN while mm-hmm. you not really having to set up a separate VPN like we had at work.
Right, right, right. And generally, most of them do work well. You've got a couple of issues, of course. One is the game of who do you trust.
Right.
Who is this company at the other end?
It's
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, do you trust them?
Right.
And the second thing is how fast are they? Because, again, it depends on what it is you're doing as to whether or not speed is important.
Yeah. All right. So it sounds like Bankwise might not be smart.
Might not be smart. I don't know.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for your opinion. Appreciate it always, guys.
Our pleasure. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Steve from Greece on the line. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I actually am not calling with a question this time.
Thank you.
the gentleman with the files reminded me of a tip I learned or something I just discovered a while ago. Anyway, in Windows 10, when you want to rename a group of files,
yeah,
instead of clicking, opening it, change your name, click to close, go down, click to, if you just push tab, it closes the one you're on and opens the one underneath it.
Nice.
And if you do shift tab, it actually goes up.
Oh, very, very nice.
I don't think it works on Windows 7 or 8, but Windows 10 for sure. Well, it's a fantastic time saver.
Nice, very nice. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. You're welcome. Have a good day, guys.
Excellent. Have fun. It's my favorite part of the show when our listeners call in and
they
give us tips.
Yeah.
I love that.
And in general, that's because when you hit the tab key, it goes to the next alphabetical file.
Right.
And shift tab goes to the previous alphabetical file.
Right.
And there's a lot of these little keyboard tricks that we learned in the early days before there was a mouse.
Right.
And thankfully, most of the OSs have carried over the old keyboard tricks.
Well,
because if your hands are already on the keyboard, it can be faster to do a keyboard trick.
Right. Back in the day when dang near everybody was using DOS.
That seems such a lifetime.
Well, you can still download DOS. There's a version called FreeDOS. And a couple of others that are available. And if you've got a very old machine, you can download PC DOS, which was the not Microsoft version, which is now free. FreeDOS.org have both full and light versions. So people are putting them on old machines.
Yeah.
Play all your
classic DOS games.
Your classic DOS games, exactly. Yeah.
I was watching a episode of Pawn Stars last night, and someone brought in a Commodore 64.
Nice.
Had the printer, had boxes of software, and they dragged an old monitor out of the back and plugged it in. And Rick, the store owner, is all geeking out over it because he remembered when he had one when he was younger. And he wrote a program right on screen. 10, print Rick. 20, go to 10. I think that's the first program everyone wrote.
Yeah, exactly. They have things for, they have FreeDOS, for example, has a graphical web browser. It has a bunch of diagnostic tools for Ethernet and for everything else. There's sound programs. There's utility programs.
I can remember loading, it was on my PC Junior.
Uh-huh.
No, my regular PC, it was a PC 286, or 386, and I wound up loading Turbo Pascal on there and writing in Turbo Pascal.
Yep.
And just sitting there, monochrome. Monochrome screen, just sitting there piling, doing code and compiling it and then testing it. And I got this error, so I got to go back through and printing off the old dot matrix printer.
Oh, yeah.
As it printing off the program and, going through the code net scene. Oh, shoot, I forgot a parenthesis here.
Yep.
The Internet Archive has started pulling together a lot of those old computer games and archiving them along with regular web pages.
Yep.
And music and video and some of the old stuff that would be gone if not for the archives that are holding them all.
Yep. Now, here's an interesting thing. There is a version of MPlayer, which is a movie or music player, ported over from Linux to FreeDOS. So if you've got an old, say, 486, 586 sitting in the closet, can't do anything with it anymore. You can bring it out, you can set that up, and you can play streaming music all day long off the thing, or record sound bites, or play sound bites off the thing. It's the idea that those old machines are dead is very, very wrong. They're still useful for a lot of things. I have an old... It's actually a 386 with like 512 meg of RAM. This would run on it just fine, and I could use it to listen to music or do all kind. I could write programs on it. There's development tools for it. As a matter of fact, there's compilers and assemblers, C and BASIC and things like that are available for it. Even Objective C, Pascal is available.
Yeah.
32 or 64-bit Pascal compiler. Supports the Turbo and Delphi dialect. So there you go.
Wow.
And, of course, Perl and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all of that stuff is out there. It's very, very cool. Those of you who are into nostalgia or have a very old machine sitting around that you've been thinking, I should throw that out, but I can't bring myself to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Download FreeDOS, pop it in and see what happens. Build yourself. You know, you can install through USB or through CD or, you know, however however you want. Most of the old machines came with CD players.
Yeah.
So you could do that and have yourself a whole new machine to play with and to sit around. So, you know, it's a very fun thing to do for a while. And then, of course, you know, break it out when somebody comes over and says, yeah, let's see what's going on. You open up this laptop from 1992 and start running a web browser on it. and there's games and emulators and all kinds of things.
I downloaded the entire CBS Radio Mystery Theater collection.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, I remember hiding under my covers, you know, listening to that on the radio after my parents thought I went to bed.
I've got two stacks of CDs, must have 400 CDs. That are old-time radio shows.
Oh, yeah.
But almost all of them are available in the archive, archive.org. But if you're a fan of old-time radio or old movies, old whatevers, you can find it. And old
Dragnet on the radio.
Yeah.
Mm.
Dragnet, The Lone Ranger.
Yes.
Thousands of those are out there. The old Superman, everything
Green
is out
Hornet.
There. Green Hornet, green everything, yeah. Very cool.
Green
very
Hornet, cool Green stuff. Lantern, Green Arrow. Was green the new color?
Green was a color.
A color.
The Green Hornet was the comic books. Was originally radio's attempt to cash in on the Shadow.
Yep.
Right? The Shadow was... Originally, the Shadow was just a voice
who
announced a mystery. See, they had a Mystery of the Week series, right? Mm-hmm. And the Shadow was just a voice that announced it. And people started running in and saying, we want more Shadow. So they hired Walter Gibson, who was a magician and a writer, to write stories. He wrote some 380, I want to say,
wow,
novels of the Shadow. He used to have this. Remember, this is the days when it was all on typewriter.
Yeah.
He had 7 typewriters lined up. And he would write on one until he got writer's block, and then he moved to the next story on the next one and write that one, and then the third one, and then the fourth one, and go back and forth until his fingers were bloody, and then he quit for the day. But he wrote all of these novels, and then they put the guy in the radio, and it was pretty amazing that, you know, out of the 300 and change Shadow novels, only a handful were not written by him. By Walter Gibson, which is his real name, and he wrote under the name Maxwell Grant. That was the guy in the Shadow. And yeah, I have a bunch of those books, and I suspect they're probably online somewhere now because they're probably out of copyright. Although the copyright got renewed by, I want to say, DC.
And there was the 1994 movie with
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was okay. When I was a kid, my father was very against all that kind of comic books and that stuff. And then I got very, very, very sick. He bought me every comic book he could find and every book he could find. And he brought home The Shadow, all in paperback. They had been re-released in the 50s. The Shadow and Doc Savage and Tarzan. Man, I fell in love with those three guys. Holy moly, they were amazing. And I started buying everyone, and they were only a dime at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And I was buying those things up like mad. Then they went up to a quarter. Then they went up to 50 cents. I've still got some of those.
Bust the bank.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I had to go out and get a job just to feed my Doc Savage habit. They made a Doc Savage movie, which the first half of it was excellent, and the second half of it was utter and complete crap. Yeah, it was horrible.
What's that?
It was back in the 80s, I want to say, 75. Late 70s?
Yeah, okay.
The Man of Bronze.
The Man of Bronze, Ron Ely, Eli, E-L-Y, however he pronounces that. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was like I said, the first half of it was in fact excellent, and Ron Ely looked great. He looked great. As 15th, Doc Savage,
the 15th Tarzan, if you don't count Gordon Griffith.
If you don't count Gordon Griffith, right? Ron Ely also played Tarzan. There were a bunch of Tarzans, right up to Skarsgård now.
Apparently, he's in a couple of movies this year.
Ron Ely?
Yeah.
No, he is not. How is he still alive? How old is he?
Let's see. He was born in 38.
38, okay. So he's probably not playing Tarzan this year.
No. He's playing Elder Miller in Expecting Amish. Oh, and he's playing Ares in Mesopotamia.
Oh, nice. So, yeah, there that was... I just... Man, I love those stories.
Mm-hmm.
They were great. And three different... And basically, it was three different deals. The Shadow came out first, right? And Street and Smith published the books and the radio show. And then they decided we need somebody who's as popular as The Shadow, but is the other side of thing, technology.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Shadow was all mystery and occult and blah, blah, blah. Now we need the technology guy, and that was Doc Savage.
Oh, there you go.
Right. And in the meantime, of course... decades before that, Burroughs had written Tarzan. And, oh, man, for a kid who was stuck in bed for months, it freed me. It freed me. I was in lands that had never existed. And
you forget about everything else.
Yeah, it was amazing. Man, I tore through those books.
Speaking of going back, you know, and older, you know, things and that, and computers and all that, I don't know why my mind drifted this way, but to CompuServe, remember that service?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going from, back in the day, folks, you'd go from...
You still remember your number?
No.
Yeah, right.
But I can remember, though...
CompuServe is still there, CompuServe.com.
But going, that was the first one that really got into somewhat of a GUI interface. And I can remember that on a monochrome screen going to, oh, this is so great, in selecting menu things and everything else.
What do they call it? Teletext? Something text?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a simulated graphical interface, and then eventually they went to a quasi-graphical interface. And
but I don't know why my, you know, but we were thinking of, you know, older computers and doing DOS and all that other stuff and writing. That kind of swung me back to remembering, oh, CompuServe.
CompuServe and the Well and all of those kind of places. Oh, yeah.
FidoNet.
FidoNet?
Oh, yeah.
I ran the Frog Pond, BBS.
Yeah.
And Paul Casarino ran PC Cube BBS.
Yep.
And he was all files. I was mostly
And he had the library conversation too, for the user group.
Shareware
PC Cube.
He had 18 CD drives. Connected to his machine. 18 of them.
Mm-hmm. Probably floppy drives back then.
No, they were they were CDs.
No.
CDs.
Yeah.
And every month you would get a CD full of
new
shareware.
Stuff. Yep.
See, I go back farther than that. I used to have the floppy disk library for Apple Cider.
So did I. Yeah. I had it before you did.
Yeah.
And I'm
back. It's in my closet.
I wrote a bunch of programs in HyperCard.
Yep.
That I could just go through and say, I want this and this and this and this and this. And I put the disk in, it would copy everything. And then it would come up and say, put in the other disk. And I would
print a label for you.
Print a label for me. Did everything. It was very, very cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. While you're gone, let's take a moment of silence for Adam West, who passed away at the age of 88.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we were reminiscing about the old stuff. On the other hand...
Now, when my son is an old man, he's going to be reminiscing about today, these days, as being the olden days. remember the olden days when we only had 150 channels and cellular phones actually had you know, wires on them? And
remember when we had to actually look at our phones instead of having them implanted in our heads?
Yeah.
I told you, didn't I say this earlier, that both Google Home and the Amazon Echo can make calls to people.
Yep.
Echo is Echo to Echo only, as far as I know. But Google will actually make phone calls.
Through the Hangout service, probably.
Probably. They don't say, but basically if, you know, you can ask Google to, you know, call my wife or call, you know, call Steve Ray, call whatever, whoever. As long as I have you in my address book, it should do it. It's very, very clever, I think. You know, we're at that point where, you know, right now, tomorrow, you could say, remember when we had to pick up a phone to make a call instead of just saying, hey, device?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Pretty amazing.
Well, that's what I still like about my phone. I can sit there, have it sitting over on the stand, and I need to know something, and I just, you know, spout off, tell it what I want to know, and comes right back with it.
Yep.
It's like, cool?
Well, but this, you know, this comes back on a nice big speaker.
Yep.
I have the Google Home, which has decent speakers in it. I'm kind of impressed, given how small it is. And then the Echo Dot, which looks like a hockey puck, has a I've connected external speakers, so I get a nice sound out of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was very kind of upset. I was listening to Whisperings the other day, solo piano radio, very nice music in the background when I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask Google, it actually plays the free stream, which means you get ads every once in a while. Yeah. It says, you know, yeah, if you're enjoying this, you should pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It there doesn't seem to be a way to hook up my paid subscription to it yet, although I have to do more research into that. But if you go to Amazon, it just says, you are going to want to buy that through Amazon. Here's a sample. And then it plays like 30 seconds of a song. Okay.
Apple does that too. They prioritize their own service above other services. And I've read even sometimes if you already have the song on your device and it says, here's Apple Music. What? I don't want Apple Music. I've already got that song.
Right. And that's why I tend to use my Google Home much more than I use my Amazon Echo, or much more than I would use the HomePod.
Yep.
You know, if I can get what I want without a lot of rigmarole, then I'm a happy man. That's simple enough.
We'll see if Google starts their own streaming music service, and then they'll do the same thing.
Well, they have a music service, Google Music, music.google.com. And not only can you play stuff and things like that, but you can upload your own music. And play your own music. So here you go. There you are. You're in there now. So that all is available to you, but they prioritize letting you do what you want as opposed to charging you for something.
We just got one thing in at work, which was, I thought, kind of unique. You know, if I'm out working in my wood shop, you know, and I want to listen to music and that, they now have a LED light with a built-in player. So you can take out your phone out to, say, the garage and turn on the light and Bluetooth it, you know, and play off your phone through the speakers on the shop light, and you can have music while you're sitting there.
Nice.
I thought, that's pretty cool.
Nice. Now, if you can only attach it to your Google Home or your Amazon Echo, you'd be all set.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, the stuff is changing, like I say, faster than what we can keep up with nowadays. I mean, it's unbelievable.
There's a little device we sell called the Rocky. I think it's ROKI. That is, excuse me. Basically, it's an adapter that takes your old style analog, you know, speakers.
Oh yeah.
And adds wireless music capability to them. So now they can become a wireless destination for your phone or your computer.
Yeah, a little known fact, Rocky Horror Picture Show, is the only movie in the Rocky series that does not star Sylvester Stallone. Just an important fact to...
He had a cameo, though, didn't he?
To let everybody know. There's a cameo.
Probably on Saturday Night Live.
All right, back to the news. It took long enough, and it still isn't done, but it's close enough for now. Music services Pandora, speaking of music services, streaming music, music services Pandora and Sirius XM, which have been circling each other for more than a year, are finally linking up. But we have to take a break, right? No? Okay. No. I thought you were getting ready to click the little button.
No. We're...
10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes, and we're almost done.
I didn't look. I just saw you standing there looking.
No,
doing
I'm just
the
getting some of the other stuff.
All right, okay. All right.
Ready? You know.
All right, so take this two. Isn't... Take two. This is this isn't we can, we'll fix it in post. This isn't a full-on purchase of Pandora by Sirius, which the two sides had reportedly been discussing as recently as this week. Instead, Sirius will invest $480 million in Pandora in return for a 19% stake. So you can imagine how much Pandora is worth. I'll let you do the math. The math will be left as an exercise for the listener. The investment also means that Sirius won't end up with a majority stake in Pandora anytime soon. Deal terms prevent Sirius from buying any more Pandora shares for another 18 months and will also prevent Sirius from acquiring more than 31.5% of the company without the approval of Pandora's board. It's unclear why Sirius and Pandora ended up with this structure instead of an outright acquisition, but strategic rationale for the hookup has been obvious for a very long time. Pandora needs help. For years, it's been trying to figure out how to make enough money from audio ads to cover the cost of its popular free service. The struggle ultimately prompted the company to launch an ad-free subscription service this year, long after competitors like Spotify and Apple Music had gained traction for what are essentially identical services. Oh yeah, in addition to those guys, Pandora is also competing with Google and Amazon, who can burn money all day long in pursuit of customers. Pandora can't. Pandora does have one thing Sirius could really use, a widely distributed user base, 76.7 million people, though that number has been shrinking, who use Pandora almost exclusively on their phones. That kind of mobile internet reach could be enormously useful to almost any consumer company, but especially Sirius, which delivers almost all of its music to listeners in their cars using actual satellites that it launches into actual outer space. I'd say that makes as much sense as using ponies and pigeons to deliver the mail, but apparently it continues to work for Sirius. Still, you can see where this is going because you may be listening to this over the internet right now. In fact, how many people are listening to this stream?
76 at the moment.
76 there, and how many on
seven.
Seven? So a number of you know what I'm talking about. And then there are a bunch of you who are listening to this during their hundreds and hundreds of you, 398, I think it was last week, people who download the shows afterwards and play it. So you know what we're talking about. Sirius and Pandora don't spell out how they're going to work together beyond the fact that Sirius will end up with 3 of 9 Pandora board seats, including the chairman slot. But the obvious play is to use Pandora's digital reach to both market Sirius's existing services and to eventually migrate some Sirius customers there while fending off competition from the Apples and Spotify's of the world. In the meantime, Pandora is dispensing with the notion that it can diversify its way out of its problem. It's selling off Ticketfly, the ticketing service it bought for $450 million less than 2 years ago, to rival ticketer Eventbrite for only $200 million. So that's, for 2 years they only lost $250 million. So what's your favorite streaming service? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I just found an article on Gizmodo comparing streaming services, sorted from the most screwed to the least screwed.
Because nice scale there.
Giant companies like Apple and Amazon have their own music services. SoundCloud just had to take a loan against their debt. Pandora getting purchased. Spotify has been really popular. And as more and more large companies start creating streaming services that can absorb losses in the rest of their business, the smaller companies are kind of screwed.
Right, and that's why they're consolidating.
Yeah.
Remember when Napster was the king?
Yeah.
Not that it had any legal music on it, but it's still the
share.
King. BearShare, and all of those places where you download all the viruses your machine can handle.
Yeah.
Very nice stuff. But nowadays, it's mostly legal. Like I said, I use Google Music for dang near everything. I have Pandora as well. And those are just the services I pay for.
Pono shut down. Their name was stupid. Pono Music was Young. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Neil Young. his higher quality music player. So the generation of kids have grown up with 128-bit MP3s, thinking that's high quality. So the Pono player was a much higher quality player, much higher quality streaming service. They're going offline. SoundCloud is. I might post this article, but the opening paragraph is a little racy.
Isn't it? Oh yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll skip that one.
Not safe for dang near anything. All right. Well, that music tells us you wasted 2 more hours of your life. But we want to thank those of you who stuck with us for no discernible reason. Apparently, I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright for whatever it is he does.
Next week is Father's Day. Put your hints into your family.
That's right. Get your hints into your family. And for those of you who are not fathers, what?
Next weekend, yeah, the 18th.
18th, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, going back to
that. Exactly right. I want to thank
Steve Ray.
Well, he's
waiting for Grandfather's Day.
Right. I'm Nick Francesco, and we'll be back next week with a whole lot more soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Bye-bye.